shores of El Pacifico. Bill Hendrick.
Conflicting reports, many of them saying Caroline Kennedy
27
is,
feet. Yeah, 30. So we're seeing a 27-foot drop in that area right there.
We just wanted to ask you.
Excuse me, this is a senator-only elevator.
People who have died, and the rest of us will be cannibals.
To me, it's a joke.
World-famous Phil Hendrick Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. This is a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. We go through the looking glass here of media each and every night. We have coming up Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton from the West Virginia State Legislature coming to us from Charleston, West Virginia this evening. And we're going to be talking about representation. We're going to talk about politics. Politics and how our elected representatives should respond to us. Okay, you know, Edmund Burke was, well, I'll let, it was actually a quote that I got from Kurt Queedy, that Edmund Burke, the great English philosopher, who said that really the elected representative should lead and not just be a delegate, but we'll find out what they think. Coming up in the show tonight, we have a mall confronting a man photographing his son, thinking that he could be a pedophile. This guy's photographing his own 4-year-old son. And Louis Farrakhan was apparently abducted by aliens and told the future, or something like that. Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam, he thinks he's God now, see? So he's traveling in the well-worn path of Charlie Manson and Jim Jones, if he's lucky. 877-87... Well, come on, man. I mean, the guy thinks he's Jesus. Isn't that the next step? Or whatever the hell he thinks he is. 877-876-PHIL. Coming to the line with us here now is Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton from the West Virginia State Legislature. Both these men, legislators there in West Virginia, and we've had them on in the past talking about President Obama's election, talking about political moments here in the life of our country over the last few years. Kurt and Guy, how you doing?
Doing very good. Thank you for having us on your program.
Yeah, Bill, I've been looking at the menu here. We want to get some.
No, I don't want anything to eat tonight. I know you guys were probably over at Rosie's there, right?
We were here with the very late session, and we just got out, so I think Guy's going to look over the menu, and we'll see what we're going to have, but we're very, very hungry, I'll tell you that.
You guys, what were you guys voting on tonight?
We have a couple of proposals right now. We've got that Veterans Center.
Yeah, the Veterans Center, and I know that Kurt is going to be very, very modest about this bill. It's something that Kurt has been working on for a long time.
Now, this is a state-sponsored Veterans Center, right?
That's exactly what it's going to be, and with any luck, and you know, God willing, the will, prick doesn't rise, we'll have something on. I think we'll be able to have a vote early next week.
When you guys talk about among yourselves, you talk about doing the work of the people as representatives, because this is a discussion that is going on nationally. It's a discussion, as we say, the country's having with itself. What do you think your job is, to lead? Or to be a delegate, to be a leader, or to just go to Charleston, in your case, Kurt and Guy, or to Washington, D.C., to simply represent exactly what the people want?
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, Phil, I think that you've got a question that I think is a question for the ages, as they say, but I don't think there's any question in my mind that we are called upon, I think most often, to use our good sense. I think that's why we were elected. People will see that we have good sense, and we're going to represent them. And I think the people need to have some patience. You know, sometimes they'll say to you, well, why don't you lead us and tell us where we should go on this issue? And other times they'll say, this is exactly how I'm feeling about that.
And one thing, if I go against my conscience, I can't vote on that.
What is that, Guy?
If I go against my conscience.
He's saying if it goes against an elected representative's conscience, if the people say, well, here's something we want, but I can't in good conscience vote for that, you know, I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
But I think the people have been lacking patience lately because we, more and more, you know, we're hearing how we are called all kinds of names and this kind of thing. It hurt, you know.
Well, they tend to call you a thief and everything, and they call you a crook and everything. You know what you call it? A hypocrite or something like that. You know, they even like a man on the count. I come down here.
And, well, they had an article in the local paper here.
Well, now, hold on. Guy was talking about being called names.
Oh, yeah, they're calling us names. You know, they call every elected representative all over the country get called a name. They get called a hypocrite. They get called a criminal. They get called a crook.
Yeah, they get called a crook. And I'm going to say about being a Rosie.
Oh, yeah, they had an article here in one of the weekly newspapers saying this guy and I was spending a lot of the legislative in West Virginia. I'd love to come over here and have a late-night meal. Oh, yeah. They had an article in a local paper. We come over here, and they say that we're bird-dogging some local talent, a thing like that, you know.
Well, you guys, well, they're talking about the fact that you guys like to go over to that restaurant, which I know a lot of the members of the legislature do. It's called Rosie's, right? It's in town?
Well, yeah, Phil, it's right across the street, you know, from the Capitol Building. And we are spending time here. They'll say that we're here talking to waitress and everything. We do an awful lot of work here.
We bring a lot of our work across the street to have something to eat here, Phil. So I think it's a question of respect. And we've been getting disrespected. And I'm not trying to criticize the voter, and I'm not saying that people don't have a right, but I think there's a saying going. My mama used to say it. I'm sure your mama did, too. You know, you get more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. And I think if the American people learn that lesson a little bit, they're going to get a little bit more of a response out of the elected representatives all.
I think that's a fundamental. They're their fundamental feeling there, how people see, you know, their elected representatives as they do now.
All right, well, what you guys are saying is that the voters of this country have been very disrespectful? Is that...
I wouldn't say that. But yeah, I think there's been an awful lot of disrespect.
We're not saying that the people are supporting it, but the disrespect has been very profound.
I'd say there's been a lot of disrespect, though, yeah. I can tell you that I am not going to respond to a letter that I'm going to get from someone, a constituent, to call me a crook, or a constituent saying something like, why don't you do some work? You are lazy, you're a crook, you're on a public dime. They will confront you, Phil, with all kind of invectives.
Yeah, very hateful.
Very, very hateful speech. That's not the way to get me on your side, you know. And
well, I understand that. But, I mean, how many letters like that do you get?
Well, we get, I mean, you hear people all the time, you know, you see them on TV, they say, what do you think of this, what do you think of that? Well, our elected representatives are crooks. Our elected representatives are lazy. Our elected representatives are not doing what we want them to do. Our elected representatives, very hateful thing, you know, like when the Congress voted itself a raise, which of course they're entitled to, people are very hateful saying, look at these guys, they're not doing any work.
Yeah, they're not doing what they get a raise.
So I think American people need to ask themselves, do they want something done or do they not?
Curtin Guy, what you're saying is, if the American people want something done, they have to be nicer?
Well, I don't think, Guy, what were you saying?
Well, look at you, look at this man flying an airplane in a building. Now, that is the wrong way to get my attention. That's the wrong way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's the wrong way to get my attention.
Well, I mean, I think everybody would agree with that.
Well, yeah, but that man, he flew that plane in that building thinking I'm going to, if I look at that, then I'm going to be aware of a problem with the IRS. But my feeling is now that I've seen that man fly that plane in a building, I support the IRS even more than I did.
Yeah, that does have an opposite effect, Phil, because now, you know, if I wanted to say the IRS is wrong and they are doing things that are infringing on the rights of the American people, now that man fly a plane into a building, what do you think I'm going to think now?
So you're saying that because Joe Stack flew the plane into the building, now you're more sympathetic to the IRS?
Oh, yeah, we're going to be more sympathetic to the IRS. Most American people are more sympathetic to the IRS, see? So that's the wrong way to get my attention.
Yeah, I would never. You don't do that.
No. You don't want to do. You don't want to fly an airplane into a building. You don't want to call me a hypocrite. You don't want to call me a thief. You don't want to call me a liar. You don't want to call me a socialist or some kind of nonsense like this. That's the wrong way to get my attention.
Well, what are you going to. Let me ask you something, guys. If the voters, and voters get frustrated, the electorate gets frustrated, they start using these terms like a crook, like liar, you understand, of course, that they need something done.
Well, I understand they need something done, but what they don't understand is I don't like being called names, is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, Phil, you understand. Nobody, you want to be called a name, right, Phil?
No, I don't. Of course not.
All right. Nobody want to be called a name. I don't want to call a name. I know Kurt does. If they call me a name, they call me a fat old crook. They said I'm some kind of old thief, you know, and I'm doing, I'm not here, Charleston, I'm not doing anybody. And they call me that. And my thing, I'm not going to work for them. I'm going to slow down on that.
I had a lady, can I tell you a lady, Phil, a supporter of mine? I have a veterans center, you know, that we are voting on.
Yeah.
Now, this lady is so happy that I'm voting on the veterans center and that I'm going to support the veterans center. We've gotten the money, we've gotten the funding for the veterans center. But she said that State Senator Kurt Quedie also voted against Martin Luther King Day being a holiday here, a national holiday here in West Virginia. Now, she was happy about that.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. You know, that was in my... At a time in my life, I don't think I was as educated, and I did. But now she is happy about that. She's telling everybody about that. And I wrote her a letter. I said, do you understand what you've done by telling everyone that I voted against having Martin Luther King Day as his birthday? Now everybody think I'm a racist or something like this. I said, so now I'm slowing down.
Yeah, you better get match is going to slow down.
Now I'm slowing down. We're not going to have a vote on this thing till next week, maybe not till later in the week, you know?
Well, wait a minute. You are purposefully slowing down the voting on this Veterans Center because this woman let everybody know that you voted against Martin Luther King Day, but she thought that was good.
Oh, yeah, she thought that was good. She's a conservative, you know. She's what we call a Dixiecrat. And she thought that was great. She said, look at this, is a great man, Kurt Quedie. He voted against Martin Luther King Day. I said, I took the Lord's name. I said, he did. And now you tightened my jaws, you know.
Yeah, that really tightened them. And so naturally, you're going to slow it down.
I said, I'm slowing down that Veterans Center now because I got to make you bleed a little bit, you know.
And what do you mean you got to make her bleed?
I'm telling you, she cannot come out and say something like that, which takes my political career back about 3 years. I got to get a little bit of blood on this. So now what she did is she pissed me off, excuse my language.
All right, well, what you're doing is you're taking out revenge on a supporter, and she wasn't even saying anything mean to you.
Something mean.
But she didn't mean to. She supported your stand on Martin Luther King Day. Turns out that you changed your mind.
Well, then she better get with it. And she better get up to speed on where I am, because now she's telling everybody, isn't he a great man who voted against Martin Luther King Day? I called her up and I said, what are you trying to do? She said, I said, what are you trying to do to me? I said, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to put off the vote on the Veterans Center because you hacked me off. I mean, you hacked me off. And you put me in a foul humor, you know.
Yeah, real foul humor, man.
All right, 877-876. Hold on, gentlemen, for just a moment. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. Should we be nicer to our elected representatives? Kurt Quedie and Guy Barton on the line with us because essentially what they're saying is there are a lot of people who are very rude. There's a lot of people that call them crooks, thieves, liars. And you're not as interested in doing the people's business when somebody is calling you names. And they also said quite the obvious thing, that the wrong way to get their attention is to do what Joe Stack did, because now they're even more in favor of the IRS than they used to be. 877-876-PHIL. More of your phone calls with State Senator Kurt Quedie and Guy Barton on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back.
Oh, yeah.
Phil Henry.
Phil, welcome back here. World famous Phil Henry Show tonight. We talk with we haven't spoken with these two gentlemen in quite some time, not since the election, as a matter of fact. Kurt and Guy, Kurt Quedie and Guy Barton from the West Virginia State Legislature, and really, it's just a general discussion this evening about the responsiveness of elected representatives to the people. Now, I know Kurt, you and Guy have both said you want to do the work of the people. You also want to lead. You mentioned Edmund Burke to me. Guy, so I want to give you credit.
Well, yeah, Edmund Burke, you know, the very, very great English philosopher said, as you said at the beginning of the show, you know, best parliamentarian is not so much a delegate as a leader, you know. And that's what I want to do. Now, I want to lead and I want to be a delegate as well, but I cannot do it for people who are going to show a level of disrespect that makes it impossible for me to respect them.
You got that letter there.
Phil, I'm opening up some email right now. If Rosie will come over, she has my laptop. Here's a gentleman wrote me a letter, asked me to support the funding of an animal shelter, so all the puppies and whatnot don't get euthanized. They euthanize them. But he did not thank me at all for the work I'm doing. He did not tell me I do a good job.
He want to have a 75-25.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Now, wait. This is a gentleman who is asking you to support the funding of an animal shelter.
Well, That is absolutely right, yeah. And we all love dogs. I love dogs and cats. But I'm not going to do it until this man gives me a bit of tribute, because this is the very same fool wrote me 2 months ago and called me all kinds of names. Called me a...
I called him turd in the punch bowl. I'm saying I can say that.
A what?
I said it.
Yeah, go ahead. You can tell him.
Turd in a punch bowl.
Turd in a punch bowl?
Oh, yeah. This guy, now he called me, and now he write me up. He want me to support an animal shelter. And my temptation to write him back and say, I hope every dog, every cat, every mouse, every hamster, everything you got, I hope it all gets gassed. I hope it's gassed. And they put them in a big, long, you know, like a miniature trench, you know, with a little miniature bulldozer because of the thing you said about me.
Yeah, but isn't that petty? Isn't it petty, in other words, Kurt, to say, no, I'm not going to support that because you wrote me a letter?
No, everybody wants to.
No, you got to understand. You can't be support. You can't have us do a man, do the man's work when a man is calling you a turd in a turd in the pool and everything. You want to do that?
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to some phone calls here on the Phil Henry Show in Charleston, South Carolina. This is James. Go ahead, James. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Kurt Queedy and Guy Barton. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'd like to know why you want to hold off a vote on a veterans center because of something a woman says that was in favor of the stand you took on the vote at one point in time. For you to do that sounds to me like you don't have a grasp on reality.
What's that? I didn't hear what the man said. Say that again, sir.
I said, why are you withholding your vote on a veterans center because of something a woman said on a subject that has absolutely nothing to do with the veterans center? It sounds to me like you're not dealing in reality.
So, Kurt, what do you think?
Well, look, if you guys want me to vote for a veterans center, why don't you soften me up a bit beforehand? Is that too much to ask? Because, look, if she said to me...
No, wait, she was complimenting you, though.
Yeah, she said she was complimenting me on voting down Martin Luther King's birthday. Well, that's not a good time, a Democrat, you see.
Well, that's only because now you're afraid you're not going to get the black vote. Is that what you're saying?
No, hold on. Now, she had to open her mouth and ruin everything, see?
Yeah, but the lady thought that she was saying something that she thought you would like.
I've got to have people supporting me that've got 5 cents worth of brains between their ears. If she stand there and said, oh, now look at here, I love Kurt Queedy because he voted back Martin Luther King. Now she just soured it for me with the black, see?
Yeah, but who are you hurting? You're not hurting her by holding your vote off on the Veterans Center. You're hurting the veterans. I don't think you get it. You know, you're complaining about people calling you ignorant and a crook. I call you a buffoon because you don't seem to understand that what you're doing is you're hurting the veterans in the Veterans Center. You're not hurting that woman.
Right. This is a state-sponsored thing, too, Kurt. You know, the federal government right now is up against it in terms of funding, but if you've got a state, West Virginia, that wants to fund a veterans center...
No, but you gentlemen, you're missing the... You guys are way off the ball.
Let me ask you something. Are you a veteran?
We got a black president right now, and for her to say
you
I voted down Martin Luther King Day...
Are you a veteran?
Am I one, sir? Oh, no way. Me? No way. No way. Me? Are you kidding?
Huh?
You think this man a veteran? No, he ain't no veteran, no. He's never a veteran.
No, you're not a veteran?
No, I've never been a veteran. No way.
Well,
I'd never be a veteran.
Of course, you don't
I couldn't
understand.
Be in the military. I couldn't be in the military because if they tortured me, I don't want to be tortured, but I do want you to know that we got a black president. I'm supporting Martin Luther King Day.
All right, fine. So you support Martin Luther King Day.
What's that got to do with the Veterans Center?
Well, it doesn't have any... This one woman, her name is Selma Bear... who was with me on this, and then she had to open a big mouth. Now, I've got to make her pay. Don't you understand that?
No, why you don't have you to make her pay. How are you making her pay by stopping your vote on the Veterans Center? Can you explain that to me?
Yes, sir, I'd be very happy to. Sir, she was in support of the Veterans Center.
Yeah.
And she said, would you support? I said, I'd be very happy to support it. She says, you're a good man. You even voted down Martin Luther King Day the way I wanted you to, even though we got a black man in the White House. You don't care. And I said, boy, you stuck your foot in it now. And so I said,
so
I got to punish you. I've got to hurt you for that.
So
that's not hurting her.
So what, you're, So what you're saying now is you were only supporting the Veterans Center because you thought, because you liked her, you were going to support it because she asked you to, and not because you felt like it was the right thing to do for the veterans. Is that what you're saying?
Because I liked her. Now that sounds that sounds very kinky.
Well, all right. I thank you, sir, for your call. 877-876-STILL, world famous Phil Henry Show. We'll be right back with Curtain Guy.
And I'll go get a gobble.
It's the Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL. And with me, Guy Barton and Kurt Quitty from the West Virginia State Legislature as we talk about the the role of our elected representatives in our everyday lives, and whether or not, you know, whether or not we give them respect. I mean, it's, I know that you're talking here, Guy and Kurt, about getting respect, and that is, I don't know, getting the respect of the constituents, that they communicate with you respectfully, that they that they're not insulting. Is that essentially the, because you're saying that you're not going to do their work.
Hold on, Phil. I'm almost here. Is it too much to ask for a letter not asking me to do something? Can't you just write me a note saying, "Hey, we like you." You know, voters always asking for stuff, a bunch of things they need, like they want. You know.
Yeah, that's the other thing, Phil.
What are you saying, that the voters are always asking for something?
That's something. Yeah, and so I say to them, there's something different here in West Virginia that we would like people to write us letters. And they're going to say, well, we're not asking for anything. We don't want nothing. We don't want a sewer system. We don't want this. We just want to say, they're doing a very good job, you know, so they're not whining and crying. You know.
The man flying an airplane. You see what I've done?
Yeah, well, that's a good point, you know, about Joe Stack.
Well, you said that Joe Stack flying that airplane now makes you guys even more sympathetic to the IRS.
That's what it's going to do. Now, whatever we can do to support the IRS, we're going to do double.
Right, because of Joe Stack.
Well, I mean, that sounds a little childish, doesn't it?
How's that childish? Are you crazy, man? Boy, he's crazy.
You're crazy, man.
Are you
No, I'm saying, isn't that childish to base your support of the IRS on the fact that you don't like Joe Stack, so therefore you're going to support the IRS more?
Well, see, what you know, you got to understand, Joe Stack pissed me off. And excuse my language, I have to deal. Are you going to talk direct to me, Phil? I'm going to talk direct to you. Joe Stack pissed me off when he fly a plane, because he's saying, all you people there, man, watch this. Oh, yeah, you don't know what I can do. So I said, look at this. Here's something I'm going to do. I don't care about the IRS anymore, and I care about sweeping you off into a hefty bag, you know, or vacuuming you up with a Hoover. I go ahead and sprinkle you at sea.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking with Kurt Quitty and Guy Barton on the Phil Henry Show. Let's go to Hank. You're on the Phil Henry Show. Hank, go ahead, sir.
Hi, good evening, Phil. I apologize for nothing. I apologize for nothing. I always start any forum like that because in this apologist society they want us to be in, I apologize for nothing. I've done nothing wrong. Anyway, Kurt, I almost started laughing listening. I said, surely Phil's got a ringer in here or something tonight, you know, talking like this, because this guy's not.
You know what? I'd believe that, too. I would believe that, too, Hank, if I didn't know these guys for the last year. But sometimes I got to tell you, Kurt, you come off sounding like you are kidding.
Well, I tell you, Phil, I take my job serious.
Well,
but I'm
an
original
things,
man.
Kurt, there's two things that really upset me listening to you. First off, you're going to take revenge, okay? You're going to take revenge on the public dime against an individual, okay? You got to be thick-skinned. You can't be thin-skinned and be in politics. That leads me to the second thing you said that gives me less and less respect for you. You said it hurt your career. Anytime a politician starts talking career, he's just lost me. He lost any respect I may have. If you want a 25-year career in politics, you're not the kind of guy I want there.
Now hold on for a minute. You look at, but you start what you just said. Now you're talking all. You see, now how am I going to respect you or do what you want me to do when you talk all
about respect.
Me?
I neither desire nor want your respect. Okay, I don't want respect.
Well, then I can't.
Man
then
like
I'm not going to. Then I ain't going to do anything for you when I'm elected.
a representative. Exactly. You know, you got
all I can do is try to vote you out and get you out of there. You don't need to be in public service at all. You don't need to be holding a stop sign in the street at a bus crossing. I mean,
are you trying to tell me? Like, I'll give you an example of something. They want a sewer system in the southern part of the state in a place called Ridley.
This
is the southern part of the state. It's very poor. But I got a letter from them. It started off, dear Mr. Senator, we need a sewer system. There was nothing in that letter that said, how are you? Pleased to make your acquaintance.
Yeah, we got a normal salutation. A normal salutation. That's
Wait a minute. These are people, they're poor people, you said, and they're looking for a sewer system. What is it that they did wrong?
What if they did wrong? They write like, and I don't want to use the term. You know the term. I know the term. Whatever you say, white trash. They're not white trash.
Okay,
but they're writing like hillbilly.
Now the elitist you coming out, too.
No, sir. I'm looking for just a little bit of respect.
You're ignorant, you're an elitist, and you're a career politician. So that's three strikes, buddy. You're out. They need to vote you out. Three strikes. Elitist.
That may be, sir.
Career politician who's
that may well be.
Yeah, you need
that
to
may well be.
Out.
But do you realize how you pissed me off too? You call me ignorant.
I don't care.
Make me mad.
I don't care. So you need to be. You need to be.
Well,
so
that means I'm
going to
be even less responsible.
But what? Wait a minute,
Kurt. You can cure ignorance. You can't cure stupidity, but you can do something about ignorance through education.
If
that's where your problem lies, you need more
you
education.
You do a lot of talking.
Kurt.
Why don't you run for elected office? Okay.
I can't stand a pay cut. I can't stand a pay cut, buddy. I don't want to be a career politician. I've got a career.
So you expect me? You expect me to do all this work, and you want to pay me dog wages?
No, I expect you to step down. Every position ought to be part time. Okay. Do you have a full time position?
Well, wait a minute.
Do you have a full time position in the legislature?
Do I have a? Isn't that that's a personal question? Isn't it? Do
suppose,
I have a full-time
is it a full-time position? I mean, is that your job in life?
Yeah,
he's
got a full-time position. His full-time position, but his full-time position with Rosie over here.
Yeah, that's my full-time position.
See, that's
young lady.
Mistake right there. You ought to be up there tonight lobbying to make sure that every elected official is a part-time position. It should never be a full-time position.
You know, you do a lot of talking. You ain't doing no listening, son. You're doing a lot of talking. You ain't doing no listening. I'm telling you.
Well, no,
I'd like to do everything that you want me to do.
I'd like to do everything you do, but
I ain't going to do nothing as long as you talk. You're talking, you trouble me like a woman, you know. And
oh, come on. Don't start talking. Now you're getting insulting.
No. I swear, this man, he got no ears. I come to call him no ears, like in a movie.
But the man's point is a very good point. You cannot treat voters with disrespect. They'll vote you out.
No, that's what he got wrong. He knows as well as I do, voters in this country don't vote nobody out. They keep everybody in, and that's the way it ought to be. But you want me to fund the veterans? You want me to fund the Veterans Center? Yes, you do. Well, I don't like you, and I'm not going to support it now. You see what he did?
Well, Phil,
that man's not even from.
If that's the condition of politics in West Virginia, no wonder it's the poorest state in the union, and no wonder it's the most ignorant state in the union.
That's Mississippi. That ain't West Virginia. So you got to start reading
the newspaper. No. West Virginia, on a relative basis, is much worse off.
No, wrong. I just got the statistic. I can show you. And because of you open your mouth tonight, there ain't gonna be no veteran senate. We're gonna vote on for 2 weeks.
Yeah, he just decided.
Guy's from Tennessee.
You see what he did? Look what he did. And the people of West Virginia are going to thank you for that.
No. The people of West Virginia know that you were being petty, and you're blaming it on Hank.
No, Hank started going da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So guess what? Now there ain't going to be no vote.
All right, Hank, thank you very much. I don't think anybody's blaming you.
And then, like I said, I pity the people of West Virginia if this is what they have for representation. Bless their hearts. I wish they'd go ahead and
pity the people of West Virginia.
But God bless
you
all here. But I'm enjoying the
show
regardless, and God bless all of you.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you for your call.
He ruined it all. Now, how come you giving him all kind of deference and everything?
Yeah, you're licking it up. You're licking it up one side and down the next, Phil.
No, excuse me. Excuse me, guy. No, I'm not licking anything up one side and down the next. I'm listening to that man, and I'm simply saying to you, Kurt, why you would blame the non-passage of that Veterans Center.
I'm using that as an illustration of what I'm trying to say, and you ain't going to want to get it. And
what don't I get?
I said that man called up. He called me a bad. Why don't you give out the phone number there?
Yeah, give that phone number out, Phil. Just go on. I have people call.
Yeah, I'll give the phone number out, guys, but I'm asking you... why you blamed him. 877-876-PHIL is our number. Forgive me. 877-876-PHIL. Why did you blame him?
I blame him because I'm here. I'm talking to you. At a veteran center's up. Now, here come a man from Tennessee. He's going, hey, you this, you that. You a pile, man. You a pile. You a pile and a half, man. There's a whole passel of flies will lay their eggs in you. Like I'm a mounded turd, you know. I said, just for that? Well, guess what? Now there ain't going to be no veteran center.
Yeah, he bought it. He stepped in it good.
Oh, yeah, he stepped in it. He ain't going to get that rinsed off.
877-876-PHIL. I don't know why you'd blame him. Here is Chip on the Phil Henry Show. Chip, go ahead. You're with Guy Barton and Kurt Queedy.
My basic thought is I'm sitting here listening to these two elected representatives, and I guess my thought is that the only way they're going to earn respect is by actually representing the voters and not their own little petty agenda. And I need to finish. I think elected representatives ought to have some maturity and some common sense, and they need to listen to the voters, or they need to be put out.
You're wrong, man. You're wrong.
No, I don't think I'm wrong.
You need to listen to voters. We've been listening to voters. We've been listening to voters for a long
you
time.
You don't listen to the voters, and you need
yes,
to vote, and you need to represent the people.
We listen to them, but they don't make no sense.
Yeah, what do you do when the voters don't make no sense? See, what you do, you have to lead then, and then I lead, and they write me a letter, and they call me a dog. They say, this man's a dog. I get that in letters. And so that says to me, I said, okay, guess what? I'm going to do what I feel like doing. Y'all can just, I don't care if you burn, you know.
You weren't elected to do what you want to do. You were elected,
to lead
the people.
Right, to lead the people. To lead the people.
You weren't elected to lead. You were elected to represent.
Yes, I was. No, you got it all wrong, son. You don't even know what it is. I'm supposed to do what I think is right on behalf of the people.
Well, this is the age-old debate, isn't it? Do representatives, are they there to do what they feel is right for people, or are they there to just simply to just do the bidding of the people?
No, we're here. I'll do the bidding of the people as long. See, I would do the bidding of the people if they write me a letter. A fan letter that's got more than just a lot of complaining.
Yeah, the fan mail we get.
How do you deserve a fan letter?
No, you know what I mean.
We're talking about the letters that we get from people, like the fan mail.
It's not fan mail. It's constituent mail.
Well, yeah, but it's the same thing, right? And they'll say that...
No, it's not the same thing.
And they say to me, excuse me, when are we going to get that veteran center? And I wrote the lady back. I said, we're going to get the veteran center, but don't get pushy. See, she was pushing me. And then she said, but I love you because you voted against Martin Luther King. I said, we got a black president. You're going to publicize that all over hell's half creation? I said, you know what? You deserve.
Yeah. See, that's bad.
That lady thought she was giving you a compliment. She thought she was giving you a compliment. Okay, Chip, is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Thanks very much for your call, sir. 877-876-PHIL. Go over to Dustin. Dustin, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Kurt Creedy and Guy Barton. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Phil. I've been listening to this conversation for a while, and I really got to say, it's just like you know, representative is pretty much self-explanatory. They're there to represent the people, and it doesn't sound like they're doing a very good job, especially when you hear white trash come out of this guy's mouth.
Let me finish.
All right, you've been talking. Let me have my say, and then I'll go.
All right,
you're acting like a child.
Let the guy do it.
I've been serving my country for 10 years, and I've been called every negative thing up and down the board, all right? But it doesn't stop me from wanting to serve my country, all right? You get in there,
you get
people calling you duty head and whatever else you want to call it, and you're going to sit there and go, oh, no, now we're just going to do whatever the heck we want to. You know, I mean, you demand respect, but yet I haven't heard one thing come out of your mouth that deserves it.
Are you a jarhead? What you do?
Don't call him a jarhead. What do you do, Dustin? Sorry.
I'm in the Coast Guard.
Oh, Coast Guard.
You're a meathead.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not a jarhead. That's a meathead.
No,
well,
it's
look,
not
don't
meathead.
Call them names, all right?
See,
so you're in the Coast Guard.
And then this is the type of ignorance that's getting elected in our political... office,
you are,
and it just blows me away. I mean, you even know you call yourself educated, and you don't even know what I do.
Yes, I am educated. sir. I do know what I'm doing. I'm just not the coast guard.
You call yourself educated. You know, it's depressing to see this, but, I mean...
I'm going
to
ask this man a question that you give out to women.
Some lady says something that you don't like,
you do?
And then you're going to go hurt other people because
exactly.
you don't like what she
exactly.
says. This other guy comes along.
We want to do the Veterans Center.
You're going
to
continue
to... We are going to do the Veterans Center. But we're pushing it back 2 weeks because she opened a big bazoo about Martin Luther King. I can't have that.
Honestly, help me understand this then. Why are you pushing it back? Because she said something that you didn't like. Why are you pushing that back? I don't get it.
What happened was this. I voted against Martin Luther King Day a long time ago.
Okay.
And she liked that, and she brought that up as a good thing. And I told her, I called her a cow. I shouldn't have done that. But I said, you old cow. You know, I'm sure you understand. I said, why'd you bring that up now? Because we got a black president. And she said, I thought it was a good thing. I said, well, you just carved the Veterans Center a new you-know-what. I said, I'm going to push that back 2 weeks.
Look at this.
Look at what you did. Look at the mess you made, see?
Well, why would you punish the veterans, though? The veterans are the guys
made.
That don't...
He hasn't made a mess. You're the one making a mess of this.
Made a mess? Well, now, you in the Coast Guard, you don't get to come to Veterans Center.
Why not?
Yeah, I do.
This man is in the Coast Guard. These guys are they're part of our armed forces.
Yeah, but they give out swimming lessons too.
And if you served in the military, you would know what we're talking about. But you haven't, so you don't know.
Yeah,
but what I'm trying to say is,
does the Coast Guard give high diving lessons?
What now?
Does the Coast Guard give springboard lessons, things like that? You don't do that?
See, this is ignorance, man. Come on.
What we want to do is...
You're a politician.
Hey, cannibal.
And you're not
cannibal.
Are you guys kidding or something?
I want to meet the man. Don't they sponsor the cannibal contest?
That's the Coast Guard. It's not the Red Cross. They're not giving... Thank you very much, Dustin, for your call.
This guy's
I rolled my son in a swimming class. That was Coast Guard.
No, it ain't the Coast. It's the Red. Thank you very much, and thank you for your service to our country. Coast Guard is a great branch of the United States military. 877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. More of your calls coming up next.
Well, that just ain't right.
Phil Hendry.
Cannonball.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and welcome to our new affiliates in Abilene, Texas, on KGXL. And Sebring, Florida, WFHT, both carrying us live tonight, Sebring, Florida and Abilene, Texas. And as I mentioned, coming up on March the 8th, we are on the air in San Francisco at KNEW. Our number here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show is 877-876-PHIL. On the line with us is Guy Barton, Kurt Queedy from the West Virginia State Legislature. We've got a lot of big disagreement, guys, as you knew there probably would be, between you and our callers and what it means to serve as an elected representative. And you guys are saying things like, you know, they got to give me some. It's almost like people got to kiss your rear end.
I don't think I've got to kiss the rear end. You say that?
You know, Phil, it's an old joke. When people say, anybody got to kiss your rear end, I said only Rosie. And the reason why I say that, we have a waitress here. At Rosie, which is the restaurant we come to. She's a very beautiful young lady. And I said, if anybody's going to do that, I hope it was her. But, of course, it won't be because she's married. But she's very beautiful and very, you know, attractive.
Yeah, she's also very lovely and very charming. You know, we call her Double Gobble, you know.
On the gobble, you know.
I know it's peach cobbler, and you guys have explained that to me. I'll have to get the full explanation. But essentially your point, though, is that you will serve and represent people when they treat you with more respect.
Well, yeah, you'd look at a Joe Stack. Am I supposed to represent Joe Stack after he tried to kill me with an airplane? I don't want to represent him.
Yeah, that pissed me off.
See, that was going to piss me off more. But the same thing when someone said to me, you a crook, you a thief, you a liar, and you better get it going. And they turn around and they say, oh, by the way, can you get some of that pork money, get some of that stimulus money, I'd like to get a bridge going here, build a church. I said, you know, you call me a thief and a liar, now you want me to get stimulus money to build you a sewer system. Man, you can take that. You know what you can do with it. You ain't got no sewer system to put it in, but I tell you what, it's going to be coming out of there anyway.
Boy, you are crude with people, man. 877-876-PHIL.
No, I don't think I'm crude, Phil. I'm on it.
877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. It is Chris. Go ahead, Chris. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Guy Barton and Kurt Queedy.
Hey, Phil. I'm just
yes,
going to
say
short, sweet, and to the point. I'm a combat veteran and a Purple Heart winner, and if these two guys are elected officials, they are the most ignorant SOBs I've ever heard in my life.
Was you in the Coast Guard?
No, I was in the United States Navy, buddy.
Well, now that's better than the Coast Guard.
Protecting your right to be ignorant.
I am not ignorant, sir. I'm representing you the best way I know how, and
not
I come home and you're calling me name.
You are not representing
me.
You're representing the poor people of West Virginia. Thank God you're not in Tennessee.
We're trying to do the best we can, and you come home and you call
us your best
dirty
sucks,
name.
Buddy.
Yep, my best sucks.
Your best sucks.
Okay, that makes me, now I don't want to help the Navy.
You see what you've done? You've hurt the Navy.
I don't need you to help the Navy.
No, you have hurt the Navy tonight by you call me a dirty name.
They didn't call you a dirty name.
Well, now, I don't like the Navy.
Navy, buddy, and if the Navy
no, he didn't hurt the Navy.
Navy. The only thing you're going to do is hurt a country tonight.
877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
I got you. You rip off Jack Nicholson and out of what he's
go to talkradionetwork.com for more information.
Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. This is Radio for Patriots by Patriots, and that means we are here for you, and we're here to do just one thing. That is lockstep, join hands, and walk right over top of all the meatheads and the idiots that have attempted to make this country such an insufferable place to live in. And our number is 877-876-PHIL, and this hour we're going to talk with Art Griego about the wedding season and has the struggling economy affected the wedding industry. It's a wedding season, and photographer Art Griego, who's also done some work as a private pilot. I think we can probably take that off the screen now, bud.
That is pretty interesting.
We're showing a picture that was done of me by an artist named Kanatha Grisvard and Amanda Green. Both of them do these little art pieces. And they send them to me, and they look really strange.
That one looks just like you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. Anyway, so welcome back, folks. And we're online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. That means you can go over to our website and get a backstage pass and watch the show as well as listen to it. Phil TV in HD. We got it all going on here with high-definition video. And just a beautiful picture right now. I'm sitting in front of the El Pacifico, which is where our broadcast studios are located here in the land of the fog and the sea lions. Now, get yourself a backstage pass and you'll figure it all out. Don't worry about it. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-7445. So, as we mentioned, we're in a down economy, and don't we all know it? Especially those of us who own businesses or who have recently started businesses. Those of us who are in the midst of perhaps trying to expand a business. Art Griego is with us. And Art, you started out as where are you, in Santa Monica?
Phil, I'm at the Santa Monica airport right now. It's kind of busy. I'm in the restaurant right now.
And you started out as a commercial pilot. You went into the business of private charters. And now you're doing photography. You're kind of a renaissance man.
Well, I've been doing photography all of my life, and it was only in the last, I'd say, year that I decided to get into the business of photography for as a commercial enterprise, Phil. So that's when my wife gave me the idea of Wedding Portraits by Art.
And it's called Wedding Portraits by Art?
That's my business. And we will go to weddings and take... photographs not only of obviously the bride and the groom, but of the extended family and the wedding receptions and so forth. And
how is business? So we were talking about the business, the economy being down.
Well, business is very rough. You have to, in my line of work, at least the way I see it, the best thing you can do is to take a series of photographs at a wedding and hope that one or two of them is noticed by one of the big wedding magazines, and you get the photograph published in Bridal Magazine or Wedding Magazine or one of these. So I am constantly on the lookout for photographs for jobs, really, where that's going to happen. And you'll get hired to do a wedding shoot. You show up, and you have an opportunity to do some work. You know, I just saw in the paper today, Phil, Hugh Hefner.
Yeah, was it in the paper?
It was in one of the later editions, or maybe I saw it on a website.
Yeah, Hugh Hefner's wedding to Crystal Harris is called off. I haven't had time to look into that. We will cover that in our next hour, but suffice it to say, that would have been a great job, huh?
Oh, it would have been a fantastic job to have. She's a very, very beautiful woman, and Mr. Hefner has a beautiful, without question, a beautiful home. They're the Playboy Mansion where he lives, so that's the kind of a dream job that you would like to have, and unfortunately, that one, I don't know who had that job, but...
Well, he's at the job, too. So everybody, all the caterers, think of that.
Oh, yeah. But it can be a lucrative business. But these days it's been tougher because I'll show up for a job. I think I have the job in hand, and I show up, and I look at the couple, and immediately you sort of feel your shoulders slump a little bit, and the only thing you can do is start to put the equipment back in the bag.
And what do you mean you look at the couple? You'll show up.
You'll show up and you'll see the couple. And if you put together what I'm telling you right now with what I said to you a few minutes ago about being able to get a picture into Bridal Shower magazine, being able to get a picture into Modern Bride, if I show up and I see the couple and the bride is going to be not acceptable, You can go ahead and do the job if you want. I choose not to.
When you say that the bride's not acceptable, you're talking about to have a published picture?
Yeah. And just to... the first thing you want is a really beautiful set of pictures.
But isn't that up to the couple?
Well, it's up. Of course it's up to the couple, Phil.
Isn't that... I want some beautiful pictures for my wedding. You know, I don't know what the bride or the groom or whoever would say to you. You know?
Well, they want you to come and take the standard array of photographs for their wedding, having to do with the ceremony, having to do the formal portrait, having to do the family portraits. There are a series of them that you have pictures taken of the groom and his groomsmen, the bride and her bridesmaids, so on and so forth.
Right, right, right. So you're there to take these pictures.
I'm there to take the pictures, yes. But the problem that we run into in the wedding photograph business is that you show up and you immediately realize there's no way that you're going to make any money, any real money on this job.
And the real money is your being able to sell one of these photographs to a big magazine?
Yeah.
What if the couple doesn't want you to do that?
Well, I mean, generally it's pretty lucrative. And you'll say it's a limited rights thing. So you can say to the couple, if I'm able to sell one of these photographs or two of them to one of the bridal magazines, you'll get a piece of the fee. And it's a limited use thing.
So they only use it for a certain amount of time.
Right. But if I show up and I see the situation has gone bad.
And I you're using a little bit of code here, man.
I'm sorry, Phil. I'm trying to as professionally as I can.
Well, when you say you show up and the situation's gone bad...
Say it's gone south or it's gone sour. It's like if food goes bad. A wedding shoot will go bad. The same way food goes bad. The way... I shouldn't say this, but I heard in the Casey Anthony trial you were mentioning, they said the smell of a...
Yeah, a decomposing body.
Right. Well, I can tell you right now, a wedding photography job can get as... It'll go as bad as something that smells like that.
And well, I don't know what meaning what, Art? You're not making enough money.
You're not going to make any money. And so, if I get a call and they book me and they say, we would like to book you,
And well, don't you meet these people ahead of time?
Not always. Not always. They've seen my work. They call me up. They ask me to come down.
So you don't meet them ahead of time?
No.
So they call you up and they book you. You're not signing any contract.
No. They just say, will you please? Yes, I will. Where is it going to be? It's going to be at the, okay, the Riviera Country Club. It's going to be at Rancho Park. In other words, when they mention it's going to be at some high-end place.
Then you're more likely to want to take the job?
No, absolutely. And then you show up, and everything has just rotted away from the... It smells like that car.
All right, I don't understand. I don't think that's a very apropos comparison. I don't want to use that. But you're saying...
What I'm saying is the job went bad.
Because the bride is what?
The bride is too big. She's not going to be lovely enough to get me any kind of... Believe me, Phil, when I tell you, every bride is beautiful. Every bride is beautiful.
And well, if every bride were beautiful, Art, you would be... taking these jobs.
Well, I take the job if I need the job, but it's not every bride is beautiful, but not every bride is beautiful enough for wedding portraits by Art.
And because you're not going to make any money selling or leasing the rights of that photograph.
That is correct, because she's not the slender, look at. I can tell you this, Phil, the Crystal Harris-Hugh Hefner wedding was the event of the season. Why? Because she is, in the parlance of the street, not the way I talk, not the way you talk, but the way someone who lives in the gutter would talk. But let's just be clear, in that she's a piece of ass. Okay.
All right, well, if we're not talking like we live in the street, let's not do it then.
No, I was using their terminology.
Let's use terminology that a couple of educated men would use.
All right.
She's a beautiful woman.
She's a beautiful woman, absolutely. And forgive me, Phil, but that doesn't hit home as much.
And to me it does. It's perfectly fine. So you have a beautiful woman, and this is a job that you want to do. I have to tell you, you want to go to weddings, and then you see that the bride is too large or too fat or whatever you call it.
I did not use that word.
Okay. You turn around and leave?
You have to.
And what happens to these people who had an understanding that you were going to photograph their wedding?
The understanding is, and I think, and that's why I'm on your show tonight, I want people to understand that you're not going to take pictures of a wedding when the bride is that size.
And what size are we talking about?
We're talking about a size that she's going to take up. I don't know what do you mean?
What when a bride is that size, you don't want to take the picture, the wedding pictures. What size are we talking about?
We're talking about a woman big enough to fill up. If you're talking about an 8x10, let's say, she's going to fill most of one half of it.
I don't know what that means.
It's you can take a look. If you take an 8x10. And
all right, I'm going to do this on camera. In fact, people can see at home. Here's a sheet of paper. Bud, how many inches?
Hold on. How many inches is what?
The paper.
Well, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Let's just say this is an 8x10. One half of this fully?
The entire half. But it would vary, of course, because I don't think that's a real 8x10. But if she's big enough to dwarf... things around her. Or if it's just a case that there are other problems, such as the teeth. I mean, I don't know how far you want me to go with this.
Well, in other words, if she's ugly?
I don't want to use that word.
Well, that's where you're going. She's fat and ugly.
No, Phil, I would rather not say. I'm just simply saying... You asked me how was business.
Yeah, it sounds to me like business is pretty good and you're turning jobs down. You know?
No, I'm not.
Well, wait a minute. Yes, you are.
No.
Yes, you are. You're going out to a job that you have been hired to do. You see that the bride is either too big or her teeth are bad or something. So you said to me that your shoulders slump, you feel bummed out, you put the stuff back in the bag and you split.
I have no choice at that point.
Well, it doesn't sound to me like business is bad. Hold on for just a minute here, Art. We have to take a break. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. This is a man who, Art Griego, who does wedding photographs, but turns down jobs if the bride is too large or if she's got bad teeth or something because he can't lease these photos to big magazines. And I don't know if any of you ever had an experience where a photographer showed up and then turned around and left. But that's what he's done on a couple of jobs. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. And we're in an economy, and he's turning jobs down because the bride's too big. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
On the line with me, we have Art Griego with us. Mr. Griego is a wedding photographer. We've talked to Art in the past about aviation issues also, but you have been doing this for the last year, Wedding Portraits by Art. And you're saying that you're struggling.
Well, business has been really bad. If it doesn't pick up, you know, like everything else, we certainly would be looking towards some sort of a helping hand from our government, like any business would want. But I'm in big trouble, you know, and every business is. I understand that.
But you're turning business down.
No, I'm not. I'm not turning business down. I don't understand when you say turning business down. I can't use it. I go to a job that's gone bad. I go to a job that has gone bad, like a bad, exposed meat in a refrigerator.
And how is a job? When you say you go to a job and it's gone bad,
yes,
you're saying that you go to a job and you see a bride.
I can't do it. I can't make any money with that. She's that size.
But you could still take the gig and take the photographs, right?
It's not any kind of real money. The real money, the real home run money, is being able to lease some of these photographs. I can't do it, Phil. I'm telling you, I would love to be able to do it, but I can't do it when you look at a bride that looks like that. And some of these weddings are a little rural, and the teeth, if you're taking a picture and the teeth are not symmetrical, the light catches a tooth, and it literally can blind you to death. It'll blind your eyes. It'll burn the eyes right out of your skull if the light catches a tooth that is sticking out. So,
I've never heard of anything like this before in my life. I don't know anything about photography. I've never heard of a guy turning down jobs.
I'm not turning down jobs. They're going rotten on me. They're hostile to the economy.
Well, you have not made the case, though, Art, that the jobs are, quote, going rotten on you. All you're saying is you can't take pictures of a bride who's too big. 877-876-PHIL. John in Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
I don't know what he's talking about. Do you know how much it costs to get wedding pictures at a wedding? Thousands of dollars.
That's exactly right.
Hours,
exactly right.
Thousands.
No,
how much do your wedding pictures cost? This guy is a wacko.
I don't make thousands. I don't make thousands. The problem is you're going to make. First of all, are you a photographer?
No, I'm not a photographer. I have friends.
Well, you don't know anything about it. You don't know anything about it.
Come on,
I'm a guy.
Photographers. I have friends. I just did a
you have friends.
As a DJ. You're a wacko, man. You can go out there. You've got a lucrative business. Be an American. Get out there and work. Here it is.
No, I don't have a lucrative business. I don't have a lucrative business when I show up and she's the size of a house.
Too bad. Man,
what?
Come on. I wish if I had the skills and had a camera, I'd go out to.
Exactly. You wish. You wish you had the skills. You wish you had the skills. Good point. You don't. I do.
Why don't you use your skills?
I am. I'm telling you something about the business that you don't know. You think you know the business. You don't.
Hey.
No. You don't know anything about my business.
To get pictures. It takes thousands of dollars to get pictures.
Let me ask you. How do you know all of this? How many times have you been married? What are you talking? Where are you getting this information?
I have a friend that's a wedding photographer. I have a friend.
You have a friend.
He gets $1,000.
Well, he said that.
Wedding as a DJ. The two wedding pictures, you're talking about a couple of $1,000. And some of these guys do two weddings in a weekend.
You can do.
I mean, I don't know what
you're talking about. You can do. Mr. Henry, I'd like to say something.
Go ahead.
You can do $2,000, if you get the job. If you show up and she's too big, you don't get. You can't do the job.
No. Nobody's firing. No one's firing you from the job, right?
No. What do you mean? No one's firing me from the job.
You go there. You got the job. You can do the job.
You can't.
You don't take.
You can't do.
That's not
good
business.
How am I supposed to do it when she's that big?
Man, I think you need to go to business school.
No, you need to go to photographer school so you know what my business is about. I'm not trying to tell you your business, whatever it is. I will tell you that when you show up and she's the size of what, you know, use your imagination. No way.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. That man, in my opinion, was, I agree with him. He was almost apoplectic. He couldn't believe what he was hearing.
Well, you know, that he can be as apoplectic. He's got a friend who's a DJ at a wedding. He's got a friend who's a wedding photographer. Well, here's a guy that's really upwardly mobile.
You know, well, he's talking about a couple of people that he knows that make all this money.
Well, you can't make that kind of money.
Yes, if you turn around and you walk off of a wedding because the bride is too large, as you put it.
All right, you want me to be, I'll be great. She's fat. Fat and ugly.
Well, that's pretty cruel and crude for a guy who's supposed to work with people for a living, a man who is supposed to make a beautiful day even more beautiful, a guy who is supposed to present to the happy couple portraits of themselves and their families in a happy moment. She's too fat and ugly, you say, so you turn around and you walk out on the job.
You have not given me the opportunity here, Phil, to explain to you and to your audience just exactly how important it is that they drop a few pounds before I can do anything with the picture. Otherwise, they're going to look at me when I walk into Bridal Shower magazine or Modern Bride, and they're going to say, oh, here he comes. It's Griego again with more of these beasts.
And all right, hold on for a minute. 877, here it's Griego again. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Talking about...
Phil Henry. Call the Free Trade Hotline. Dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We have with us Art Griego from Portraits by Art as we talk about the wedding season, June. You've had jobs that you have walked out on because you say they are hostile to your economics. And I want you to define that. Other than saying you show up, Art, and the bride is too large or she doesn't have the right figure or something.
Phil, that's it in a nutshell. I'm not here to judge any human being or to say that someone is not beautiful or what have you, but I know what my business requires. If I show up for a job to take pictures, a wedding portrait, and the two people that I'm looking at, you know, you want to just you feel the disappointment. That's all I'm saying. You feel like you've been kicked in the gut when you turn the corner and you look at the I forget what it's called where they stand under it.
You're a photographer and you don't know the names of these things?
No, I don't. It's I call it the archway.
I mean, I don't either, but I would think you'd know this.
You don't either, but you're telling me, I would just point this out, Mr. Henry, what the arch thing is for weddings, not everybody knows.
Yes? I would think that a wedding photographer would. So you turn the corner.
And what?
You say you turn the corner.
Well, I turn the corner and I see some, you know, and then I take that picture to Bridal Magazine. And I have been more than one time had a receptionist at Modern Bride saying, here comes Art and his petting zoo. Here comes Art.
And you're telling me that's what they're calling these brides?
The ones that when they're bat size, yes, sir.
877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Henry Show, talking about bridal pictures. And why some of them he can't take. Here is Paul in Lafayette, Louisiana. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, you know, I just want to know how he gets worked. If this is genuinely his name, and my mom's a professional wedding photographer, you're putting your name out there on a national photographer to show up and shoot the wedding regardless of their of what they look like. I don't understand how you get worked.
I just have to ask you, Paul, to watch your language a little bit there. Art, go ahead. That's all right.
Yeah, well, the gentleman just said, what do you want me to say?
I think you should answer his question.
His question was, how do I get? I get a lot of work. I get a lot of work. Well, they want to have their pictures taken. And okay. So I show up. And what have they done to me? See, I'm giving them my job. I'm coming with my cameras. I'm coming with my lights. I'm coming with all of the stuff that I got my assistant. And your mother does the work, so you know. And what are they giving me? They're giving me a bride that looks... They're giving me a bride with the big, you know, the big shoulders and
the big shoulders.
It just sounds like you're in the wrong business because the day...
I'm in the right business.
Well, the day that my mom walks off a wedding is the last day she shoots a wedding because, you know, in this day and age of technology and how fast your name travels with Yelp and everything... Why would anyone go to Art when he's just, you know, depending on how you look, he's going to determine whether he's going to pole vault himself into a weddings magazine?
Well, wait a minute. I want to ask you a question. When your mother takes a picture, does she try to get these sold to, does she try to sell pictures to Modern Bride and to big magazines? I'm sure she does.
Yes, of course. In fact, naturally, yes. But other than that, she does it to capture special moments in people's lives. She doesn't do it to capitalize on...
Let's talk turkey here for a minute. Yeah, let's talk turkey here for a minute. Your name's Paul. Paul, you sound like a good guy, and I know you love your mother, but let's talk business for a second.
What?
No, you know, I'm very happy to go and capture a happy moment, blah, blah, blah. That's great. I'm here to make myself a nice dollar. I want to make a beautiful dollar, okay? Now, I turn the corner, and there is a bride with the big... I can only say the big shoulders. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
What are you talking about?
The big woman.
Okay.
I can't do it. I have a physical inability.
Is that
you understand what I'm saying, Paul?
Depending on how you look, that determines whether you're going to shoot them. Like, I just couldn't see the
game. That's a very good point.
You know what? I got to go.
You have to. I don't know how your mother does it. She's going to show up, and she turns the corner, and there's a woman there who's got that big, thick neck.
She finds the beauty of every individual.
That's what you do with the picture. All right, Paul, thanks for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to another phone call here. We have Dave. Go ahead, Dave. That's what a photographer is.
Phil, I don't need him to tell me what a photographer is. I know what a photographer is.
Go ahead, Dave.
I think that man from Arch, he ought to be put out of business. I mean, people like him, look at Karen Carpenter. I don't know if you're old enough to remember her, but she died because of people like him.
Who are you talking about?
Karen Carpenter had anorexia.
Judgmental on their weight, on their size, on everything. And he is being very judgmental on...
Judgmental.
On their appearance. What? Now, if he wants to be photography, that's what he needs to do.
Right.
What does that mean?
If you want to photograph really
good-looking
people, then go out and photograph good-looking people.
I do wedding photographs.
Well,
he's portraits by art.
I'll tell you that.
I went and started a business. I had cards made. I have a sign in the door, wedding portraits by art. Now, you want me to go ahead and set fire to all of that figuratively, and go out in the street someplace with a bunch of other sweating idiots? No, not me.
Well, what do you
think
you are? You're being judgmental to every woman that's walking the face of the earth, that their most beautiful day in the world is the day they get married. And what difference does it make whether she's a size 1 or a size 21?
The difference is...
And you're hired to take the pictures, and I'll tell you what, if I hired someone to take pictures of my daughter's wedding and they walked out, I'd be their worst nightmare. Because
you recognize my right that if I were to take pictures at your daughter's wedding and I turn the corner and she's got all that thickness, you recognize my right to leave, don't you?
The thickness? Now, well, what are you talking
about? You don't contract the hire to do a job and base it just on some of the parents. I'll tell you what.
I want to know. Just hold on for just a second, Dave.
When you leave this world and go to the other side, we're all level at the foot of the cross. And when the Lord
I don't play that. Okay. Yeah, that's fine, sir. And I'm sure you're right.
I hope you go out of business.
I'm sure you're right, sir. I'm sure that you're right that I'll burn in hell. But before I do, we're on my time.
I can't judge. You know, I can't judge.
We're on my time. You know, as Jason Patrick said in that great movie, I forget what, Your Friends and Neighbors, he said, you know, if it turns out that this God thing is real, then I'll have to deal with it. Until then, we're on my time. All right?
Yeah.
Whatever, man.
What do you mean, whatever? What do you mean, whatever?
You're the guy that's saying whatever.
No, I thought you did.
No, you did. You said whatever.
Well, I'm just trying to tell this guy that I'm here to make a living, not to take pictures of wildlife.
Boy, you know something? I can only repeat what the other chap said. And, Dave, thank you very much for your call. You know.
Well, sir, I have to tell you, I'm the piece of work. Why is it that I have to take pictures of these big women, and I can't sell any to Modern Bride magazine, and I'm eating out of a can? Every night, I'm opening a can up and eating out of it.
Why do you eat out of a can?
Because it reminds me I want to eat out of a can until I make some real good money.
Well, I don't know what that means. Thank you very much, Dave, for your call. 877.
You don't know what it means.
877-876-PHIL. I'm talking here with Art Griego.
No, I want to know. What do you mean you don't know what it means?
I don't know. What does that mean, you're eating out of a can?
I eat out of cans until such time as I sell a job to Modern Bride, and then I'll sit down with a plate and silverware and a napkin.
And why are you eating out of the can?
Because I'm poor.
Are you telling me that you don't have silverware?
You don't understand. Yes, I've got silverware, and yes, I've got plates. But I'm not, you can't talk. The economy's bad, and I don't even want to think about it. I'm depressed, and I'm eating out of a can.
Why don't you eat off of plates and use silverware and the napkins that you say you own?
Mr. Henry, you're harassing me. And
no, I'm asking you. You said you eat out of a can.
I do. Every night I open a can up and I eat over a sink. How does that... Do you do that?
No, I don't.
Well, of course you don't, because you make good money.
Well, are you starving to get to death?
Am I what?
Are you starving to death?
I'm eating out of a can.
Well, what you're telling me is this. You're eating out of a can so you can get sympathy where you could actually afford to eat off of plates, and you don't.
I have not referenced that at all.
All right, well, I don't even want to talk about that because that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. The stupidest thing that I've ever heard in my life. We're going to continue, though, talking about your business, why you're turning down business. And
well, this other gentleman who was talking to me about me going to hell, now that's a new low on any radio program that I've been on.
Well, we're not going to talk about that. The only thing that we need to discuss here is this idea that the women that you photograph, if they're too large, you get this reputation at bridal magazines that here comes Art in his petting zoo. And you're not in the process, you're not in the business of photographing wildlife. And all of these other insults.
I don't want to be insulting, Phil. I don't want to be insulting. You're absolutely right. I'm trying to make a living.
You are making a living.
How are you figuring that?
You're eating out of a can just for effect. You said that you got silverware and all of this bullcrap you're giving me, man. You are...
Well, I'm glad you can laugh at another man's misery.
I'm not laughing at anybody's misery. You're not poor. You're eating out of a can.
I'm eating out of a can.
But you could eat off of plates.
I wish you wouldn't continually go down that road.
I'm going down that road because you can afford to eat off of a plate. You can afford to use silverware. You can afford to have napkins. You can afford to probably sit there and, excuse me, make yourself dinner. But you won't do it. You'll eat out of a can until you sell some big job to Modern Bride magazine. Isn't that right?
You know what, Phil? You're not Jose Feliciano. Or who's the gentleman that...
Jose Feliciano.
Who's the gentleman that is the lawyer?
Jose Baez.
Jose, you're not Jose Baez telling me that I left some kid in the park or killed I'm here. You're not going to tell me. I'm not leaving a stink in anyone's car. They're leaving it in mine.
Well, now you're getting emotional.
You're darn right I'm emotional. I'm not getting out of someone's Sunbird and leaving the smell of goat in it. They're leaving it in mine.
Because you hired to do the job and you got there and she was too fat and you had to leave. That's their fault. They leave the smell in your car.
Yes. Yes, sir. Yes. Yes. Yes.
877-876-PHIL. What do you think about a wedding photographer who shows up, you hire him to photograph your wedding, your reception? He shows up, and you, your husband-to-be, your wife-to-be, whoever, you're not good enough. You don't look good enough. He turns around, and he leaves. 877-877-PHIL. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline. Dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our next hour, of course, is our News and Information Hour, and we have with us Art Griego, who is a wedding photographer. Wedding Portraits by Art has been in business now for the last year, and we're talking about a very unusual business practice here, Art. You're saying that your business is down, the economy is bad, you're struggling like all other businesses, and yet you're turning business away. And that's the bottom line here.
The bottom line is I'm struggling like any other business, and we are asking for stimulus help from a government that is very happy to give it to large auto industries, happy to give it to every other nonsensical and ridiculous idea. They want to build a bridge to, I heard about a bridge to nowhere. I don't know what that is. Why are we not allowed what we want? I don't know.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to Marilyn. Marilyn in Los Angeles. Go ahead, Marilyn.
Yes, Phil. I'm familiar with Mr. Griego. How are you?
I don't know that I remember you, ma'am.
Well, you were hired to photograph my wedding.
Okay.
You remember her?
Well, her.
Hold on. Mr. Henry, this is Marilyn Donnelly. I am pre-surgical. I present as a woman, but I am a transgender.
I see, okay.
And I was recently married, and I hired this man.
Mr. Henry, if I could jump.
Please allow me. I hired this man, and I can tell you, Mr. Henry, that I take yoga, that I am at least three times a week in the gym, that I don't weigh a pound over 123 pounds, I'm tall.
Yeah, why'd you tell him how tall?
Excuse me, I'm tall.
Okay, so you're still technically male.
I present as a woman.
Okay, you're pre-surgical, you're about to have your surgery?
Yes.
Can I say something here, Phil? I walked into this wedding and, you know.
Well, all right, Marilyn is saying she's not fat.
But when you say she...
That when she says she's not fat and she's not big and she doesn't have the thick neck.
Okay. You're right. I turn the corner and I always like to turn a corner. I never want to come straight on. I want to turn a corner. And first of all, I had a very hard time finding a corner to turn. And I kept asking, there were people, I said, is there a corner I can turn to see? I don't want to just walk straight in. I finally turn a corner and I see this big, tall, and I didn't know what it was.
How dare you?
What does that mean?
It means 6'3".
And he refused to take our pictures, so he's a bigot.
No, ma'am, I'm not.
He's a bigot, he's an ignoramus, and I thought you should know.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. Thank you very much, Phil. I enjoy your program.
Thank you, Marilyn. 877-876-PHIL.
Are you going to
let that stand.
You admitted to going to this wedding, and you admitted to turning around and leaving that wedding. The woman, she presents as a woman. She's about to have her surgery. She's transgender. She wasn't fat. You refused to take the pictures. That's on you. Here is Amber. Amber, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Art Griego. Go ahead, please.
All right. So you say that you're eating out of a can, but you're the one turning away the work. You've obviously got plenty of weddings booked. Do your job, and you would have money to eat.
No, it doesn't work like that. You just heard the last lady. I turned the corner, and I got a transgender, I don't know what it is. If I take a
but
picture of that...
But what difference does that make? If you're going to be paid for the job, do your job, and then you'll live fine. That doesn't make any sense.
I'm going to be... I'll be haunted forever by the image of that. That's number one. And number two... I can't take that to Modern Bride and say, here's a, how do you like this, Modern Bride? A transgender 6'3" freak.
Oh, man, are you an ass.
You are absolutely ridiculous. You're disgusting.
What?
You won't take pictures of transgender people. Who cares? Just do your job. You're a photographer, right? Take the pictures.
Yes, I am. I'm a damn good photographer. I wish there was something I could take a picture of. That's how good I am. I am so good. I wish to God.
If you're so good, you would have already sold something to Modern Bride.
I can't find a hot.
You can't find a hot-looking bride. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. I was hoping for the Crystal Harris job.
Oh, you and a million other guys, man! Are you kidding me? You know, Hugh Hefner. If there's
disgusting,
ma'am. Why am I disgusting when the Crystal Harris job would have put me over the top? And what do you think that thing did? She dumps Hefner, is having an affair with some guy that parks cars.
That's none of your business, man. That's none of your business. What happens? They don't have to get married
especially
to keep you in business.
You're a photographer.
Sorry.
If you would take the pictures, you would be able to eat fine. This just doesn't make any sense to me.
I can't take
You obviously have work.
I am an artist, Amber, and I'm sure you understand, being an artist, when I turn the corner and I see a woman who has the big, she's got masculine shoulders. All the air goes out of me. All of my dreams.
You know, you sound like a very weak man.
What is that supposed to mean?
You sound like a man that you can't really take life's highs and lows. You just, every little thing is going to screw you up.
Mr. Henry, if you walked into your radio studio every day and there was no microphone, how would you feel?
Don't give me that bull crap, man. This is not equivalent to that. Hey,
no,
listen,
it's not,
thank you, Amber.
You have a camera. You're choosing not to use it.
But Mr. Henry's choosing not to go buy a new microphone. Oh, forget it. You guys don't understand.
You're an idiot. It's a Phil Henry Show. Our news and comment hour, coming up next. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Phil Henry.
I'm eating out of a can. Thanks, Phil.
Memphis right now. Coming up later on, we have interesting news about breaking the speed of light. Man, you got to be kidding me with that, bud, right?
No, I said the man went faster than light.
The man went faster than light. I got to hear this one. Margaret Gray joins us from Graceland in the gift shop there, right, Margaret?
Phil, right now, yes. I am in the gift shop here at Graceland, and I've been talking to an awful lot of people who obviously are very excited about being here at Graceland, one of the greatest singers. In the history of popular music, Elvis Presley, what's your name?
Jim Dean.
Jim Dean. And Jim, where are you from?
I'm from Bogalusa, Louisiana.
And are you enjoying being here?
Oh, it's wonderful. We've got, I've seen everything, and I brought my guitar, and I just wanted to have Elvis sign it. I know he's dead, but every year I brought it.
Jim has brought his guitar here every year, Phil. Even though he knows the king is no longer with us, he still holds out hope that maybe Elvis will sign his guitar. But you know he's not.
Yeah, no, I know he's a, but it's just a tradition.
You bring it there, sir, knowing that he isn't going to sign it.
Yeah, it's just a tradition. I go, maybe this year he'll sign my guitar.
And what is your name?
My name is Susan.
And Susan, where are you from?
I'm from Los Angeles, but I work in New York now.
And I understand you're a famous person.
Well, my last name is Estrich.
Are you Susan Estrich on Fox News?
Yes, I am. And I was just on this afternoon with Sean Hannity, and now I'm here, and I'm really having a great time.
Can I ask you a question? Because, you know, you look lovely, Susan.
Thank you.
Did you have your nose done, or did you do...
You know, I don't want to answer that question, but
I know you did have some work done, didn't you?
You know what? I don't want to answer. You got a real pair on you.
Susan Estrichville, I know for a fact she's had work done. I think they brought in a municipal crew on her face. Honest to God.
All right, well, look at, that's the lady, huh?
Yes, that's Susan. She's over right now. Susan,
now get lost. Get lost.
All right.
All right, well, let's talk about your relationship, Margaret, with Elvis Presley, because I understand that it was an interesting one.
Phil, it was a very interesting relationship with Elvis Presley, and tonight on your program, I want to let people in on a little secret, and I'd like to get into that secret by singing this song. As the snow flies on a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby child is born in the ghetto, in the ghetto. And his mama cries. Do you recognize that song, Phil?
I do. It's In the Ghetto by Elvis.
Well, Elvis sung it and made a hit record out of it, Phil. But I am telling you and your audience tonight that I wrote that. I wrote those lyrics.
You wrote In the Ghetto.
I wrote In the Ghetto for Elvis in 1972. I was a 22-year-old young woman, starstruck. I had met Elvis Presley at the NBC special that he did in 1968 when I was just an 18-year-old girl. And I fell immediately in love, as everyone does when they meet the king. And
Now, In the Ghetto was never a song that anyone attributed to you, Margaret. I believe the writer was a man named Scott Davis, who wrote a lot of songs.
That is a pseudonym that I took.
But what about the song, other Scott Davis songs?
There was another Scott Davis, yes. But I took his name to write that song for Elvis Presley. And I remember I was with Elvis one night. We were at the Sands Hotel, and he had been on stage performing. We went back to the lounge bar, and a number of people were there. Howard Cosell was there. I remember not only Howard Cosell, but one of the members of Three Dog Night, Chuck Negro.
Chuck Negron, you mean?
I'm sorry, yes, Chuck Negron. And one of the other members from the Grassroots. I forget his name now. Bobby Smith, I don't know. But in any event, I said to Elvis, I said, I've got a song. And you know, he says, well, let me hear it. And I said, well, here it is. I said, can I sing it for you? And he said, yes, please. As the snow flies on a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby is born in the ghetto. And his mama cries, cause if there's one thing that she don't need, it's another brat to feed in the ghetto. Now, Phil, you notice I wrote brat.
Yeah, the word is another hungry mouth.
No, I know. Elvis wanted me to change that. And the reason why I wrote that, I was writing it from a woman's perspective.
Okay. Margaret, I want to ask you, because this is not something that is known, I don't think, to anyone musicologically or in any other way, that you were the author of that song.
No, I wrote the words. The music had already been written by the real Scott Davis. But I went ahead and took his name for the lyrics.
Oh, so the melody was there.
The melody was there. And Elvis had this melody, and he kept saying to me, you know, I just don't know. You know, oh, the way he says it. He said, you know, I don't know. Margaret, I got to tell you, Margaret, I'm really... And I said, well, what? He said, la-da-da-da-da, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know how the song goes.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, let me work on it. And the next morning I came downstairs. Now, I did say Because if there's one thing that she don't need, it's another screaming brat to feed in the ghetto. And Elvis thought that was harsh. He wanted that change. So I said, all right, a hungry mouth.
Another screaming brat. Boy, that's... You know what I'm saying?
Well, again, it was written from a woman's perspective.
All right.
Let me see. Where are you? And then I wrote, people, don't you understand? The child needs a helping hand, or he'll grow to be an angry young man someday. Take a look at you and me. Are we too blind to see? Do we simply turn our heads and buy some more drugs, is what I wrote. And Elvis said, well, I don't want that. And I said, well, what? He said, how about, and look the other way.
So the original lyric was, do we simply turn our heads and buy more drugs?
Yes. And Elvis...
Now, why would you have the... So your song was decidedly more gritty, I guess.
Yeah, that's a very good word, Phil. It was gritty, it was tough. And I said to Elvis, I said, you know, darling, you're singing about the ghetto, but do you know those people? And he said, you know, I'll tell you, Margaret, you know. I said, you know, it's another screaming brat. And really all they want to do with the money is go out and cop. You know,
and do what?
And cop.
Cop means buy drugs?
Yes. It was honest. It had street mentality, really. And then the lyric went, and his hunger burns, so he starts to roam the streets at night like a filthy animal to fight and steal in the ghetto. Now, I eliminated filthy animal because Elvis didn't insist, and he just learns how to steal and fight in the ghetto. But these were minor changes, and then there was another one that Elvis felt, and Phil, understand who I was at the time. I was a young, stupid girl. At the very end, I wrote, and her young man dies, and good riddance to trash, for the white man rules in the ghetto. And I know that that is...
You didn't write that.
Yes, I did. And Elvis said, well, that will never, ever fly. And I said, well, I really believe good riddance to the scum. And that's how I felt then. I don't anymore, Phil. Elvis taught me. And
did you... You wrote, and good riddance to scum because the white man rules in the ghetto.
Yes, I did, Phil. But please understand my age, the times... The times were...
It was 1972, and people couldn't be more hippied out. Everybody was hippied up.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, because I remember it to be a time of it was the golden age of George Lincoln Rockwell. And it...
No, it wasn't. No, the Nazis? No, it wasn't.
Well, in any event, Elvis said to me, I love it. Margaret, I love it, and I want to do the song. So I said, and I said it very coy, I said, well... What do I get, you know? And he winked, he nodded. Yeah, we had the understanding. I knew that we would be closer.
Well, are we talking about sex or?
No, we are not talking. Phil, Elvis taught me how to love, but he held his love back. And it frustrated me then, but I've learned since to appreciate that. He taught me how to love. I took all that stuff about white people ruling the ghetto out, and the young man dies, but good riddance to trash, because the white man rules in the ghetto. I thought it was a very good lyric. He didn't like it. So I said, when I came back to Graceland that night, not that night, but a week later, I said, I'm Margaret Gray, and they wouldn't let me in. I said, would you please tell Elvis that I'm here? And they said, well, Elvis isn't here. And I said, you know what? I don't believe you. I think you're liars. And they escorted me off the grounds.
Okay.
So I decided that I had to go in a disguise. Now, I knew that he was managed by Colonel Parker. I had never met Colonel Parker. I went down to one of the costume stores in Memphis. And I'm thinking, well, I don't know what Colonel Parker let
me... Now, wait a minute. Are you trying to get in a disguise?
Because Elvis was expecting me, and they told me, well, he's not there. His Memphis mafia was very protective. Scotty, Skeeter, Red, Butch, all those guys were very, very protective of Elvis. And so I thought, oh, God. I knew how those guys were. And I said, Scotty, it's me. It's Margaret. Come on. You know, we sang around the piano. He said, oh, I don't know, man. You know, he was trying to protect his job. So I said, I get it. So I go down. Well, a block away from Graceland is a costume store, and it's called something like Dixie Costumes or the Confederate Costume Company, something like that. And I went and I said, okay, Colonel Tom Parker, what does he look like?
So you were going to dress as Colonel Tom Parker to get in?
Well, I had to. Because these goons that Elvis hired hated me. Scooter and Red and I don't know what their names were. They all, you know, this Margaret, you know. So I bought a string tie, a white jacket, one of those white, you know, hats that I thought, I don't know, Burl Ives would wear, something like that. I got a black mustache, and I said, hi, I'm Colonel Tom Parker, at the door, and they said, okay, come on in. So that's the kind of stupid things.
But wait a minute. Are you telling me that you got past the goons, Elvis's mafia, dressed like Colonel Sanders?
No, Colonel Parker.
Well, what you're describing to me is a Colonel Sanders costume with a mustache and a string tie.
Well, I don't know. It fooled the idiots that Elvis ate, fooled those rednecks he had working for him. So,
well, probably they let you through because it was a big gag.
Well, watch how you say gag. Because later on that night...
All right, look at Margaret. I have to get breaking.
Well, I've got some more stories to tell you.
I understand that. I have to tell you, Margaret, I appreciate you being on the show. We do have a phone call. I can't get to it. That you telling me that you wrote in the ghetto is something I'm going to have to verify.
Well, you go right ahead and verify it, Phil. I think that's very rude. I'm on your program.
I don't want to be rude, but you're telling me that the last line was, and good riddance to trash because the white man rules in the ghetto. And
Elvis didn't want it in, and they didn't put it in. Why are you making an issue out of that? I came on your program in good faith. And for you to question my veracity, I think is very rude, very rude. And
I'm sorry. I don't mean to question it. I just never heard. We're going to get to a caller here when we come back on the Phil Henry Show. So will you hang around with me, Margaret?
Well, I'll hang around, but I really think you need to rethink some of the things you say to me, including the intimation that I'm some kind of slut. That was...
Well, you're the one that said, speaking of gag.
I apologize for that.
All right, hold the line here for just a minute. Margaret Gray joins us on The Phil Henry Show. She claims she is the real author of the lyrics in the ghetto, the lyrics to the song In the Ghetto. We'll be back with your phone calls coming up, 1-800-449-8255, Phil Henry Show.
Never for an hour, what I think is true.
Phil Henry.
On the air from Memphis, Tennessee is Margaret Gray. Miss Gray is talking to us about the song In the Ghetto, which was a song that she is claiming, and I'm not trying to question your honesty, that you claim you wrote the lyrics to that song. Margaret, you there?
Yes, I'm here, Phil, and I really think that we need to... I'm looking at some bald-headed man. Oh, I know this man at the Bunny Ranch in Vegas. Yeah, that's Dennis Hoff. I know him. I am...
Can you just pay attention?
No, I know. No, I wrote In the Ghetto, Phil. I wrote it lyrically in 1971. I was trying to write a real street-level song about what it's like being black, yes, but also being white and having to deal with the ghetto. But Elvis changed a lot of those lyrics.
Well, I think a lot of them, good thing he did. Don't you agree?
In retrospect, yes, I do, Phil, absolutely.
Margaret Gray, who claims she wrote the lyrics to The Ghetto. Let's go to Steve, listening to us on KRCN in Denver. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing very good, and we're enjoying your program in Denver very much, sir.
Thank you. And your question?
I would like to ask your guest a question about the In the Ghetto song. I'm very, very, very questioning all of the honesty of it.
Steve, can I say something to you? I performed it as slam poetry in beatnik clubs.
In where?
In beatnik clubs. A lot of beatnik clubs in Los Angeles, they would have these slam poetry nights.
I'm not familiar with any kind of any of those, but I'm saying that Scott Davis wrote that song.
Well, she's claiming she took Scott Davis's name.
Well, what does that mean? What does that mean?
It means I took his name.
Yeah, but he said he wrote the music to it.
He did write the music.
And also, it says Words and Music by Scott Davis. Now,
yes, Words by Scott Davis and Music by Scott Davis.
No, it says Words and Music by Scott Davis.
Yes.
Well, see, Steve's got a good point, because it intimates that one man named Scott Davis wrote...
No, it does not. The both of you, you know, look, I don't know how much... Are you in the entertainment business, Mr. Bozell?
Ma'am, that's not the point of whether I'm in the entertainment business. Mr. Henry just backed me up on it. Words and Music by Scott Davis makes the idea that one man wrote it, and you...
No, it doesn't. It says that Scott Davis wrote the words and the music. But which Scott Davis wrote which?
That's the stupidest thing. Mr. Henry, can I...
Well, I'm not here to be called stupid by some... You know, I defended you in this song. I tried to put a spin on it so that the white race was represented. And for some cracker to...
Ma'am, I'm not a...
We don't have to get into these names, okay?
Well, I'm very sorry,
ma'am. I'm not a cracker, and I'm not a white man. I'm not a black man. I consider myself to be just a man, and.
Well, it's lucky for you that you can make that assumption, because not all people can.
What does that mean?
What does that mean, Margaret?
Don't worry about it. Not everyone can be as cavalier.
Well, all I'm saying is I'm saying that I'm a very big Elvis fan.
As am I.
Let the man finish, okay?
I'm sorry.
I'm a very big... Thank you, Mr. Henry.
You're welcome.
I'm a very big Elvis fan. I've loved Elvis from the first time I heard his song, and I'm also a member of the Elvis Impersonators of America. I have performed my Elvis impersonation act on stage in Las Vegas many times.
What's your stage name?
My stage name is Elvis Presley. What's my stage name? That's a hot one. God, you... I think that, you know...
Well, no, not every Elvis impersonator calls himself Elvis Presley. A lot of them call themselves, you know, Elvis number two or Purple Elvis.
No, I just go by Elvis Presley, and everybody knows that I'm fake, you know. You know what you should have wrote in that In the Ghetto is, and there's a woman named Margaret who needs to get her lazy ass out of my bed because she's worthless trash. In the
All right, I told you not to call names either, Mr. Bozell.
Well, all of it.
You know what? I'm not offended, Phil. So you do your Elvis act, huh?
Yeah, I do.
Do a lot of people come see it?
Yes, they do, ma'am.
Well, go ahead. Do us a song.
I'd be more than happy to. I don't have my guitar or anything like that. So I guess you're going to complain about that, huh?
No, I'd love to hear it.
Go ahead, Steve. Can you sing an Elvis song?
Are you kidding me? I know all of them. And I know them very well. And I don't claim that I wrote any of them, and I didn't do it as slam poetry in some beatnik club or God. That's so wrong for you to say that.
Well, Mr. Bozell, do your impersonation.
We'd love to hear it. I really would.
So you can laugh at it.
No, I'm not going to laugh at it.
Yeah, bull crap.
Well, just do it.
I'd like to hear... If you think you're as good as me, I wrote an Elvis song.
You didn't write no Elvis song.
Yes, I did. I want to hear you sing one.
All right, here. I get out on stage and I have on the white karate suit, my wife took some pajama bottoms and she dyed them. And I have boots.
Oh, God.
Oh, see, right now. Okay.
Just hold your comment.
Mystery train going down my track. Ouch. I'm caught in my zipper.
Brother.
Phil Henry. Go to talkradionetwork.com for more information.
In our last segment, Bobby and Steve Dooley join us from the Western Estates Homeowners Association, and we are going to talk about this MoveOn.org ad, which is obviously a serious, and I can hear the music there, Ms. Dooley. Is that...
Yeah, this is Native American spiritual music. It speaks of the day when our people can return
to the hunting grounds that we knew. And it's really, I think it speaks to all people. It isn't just for Native Americans, but I believe the music is for all of us because we all want to return to our hunting grounds and worship our Great Spirit.
So there's a commonality.
It is, yes. There's a commonality in culture. There really isn't any difference between the Native people and those of us who are opposed to the war in Iraq and who want to save the environment, and certainly those of us who are opposed to offshore drilling. We think that... I'm sorry, what?
I got to use the part of the story. I don't know what they are.
Phil, can you hold on for me? I'm awfully sorry. My husband's going out to the store. We want to get up early in the morning, and we're going to... the boys have soccer practice, and I'm the snack bomb. So can you hold the line for a minute?
Yeah, I do have a time constraint.
Well, I'm the snack bomb, and I've got Steve's going off to get the snacks. Just hold on.
All right, while we're waiting for Ms. Dooley, we'll tell you that she is, as I said, a member of an organization called Angels on Our Shoulders, which is a anti-war organization of concerned mothers, and they are going to, she is on the program here this evening to respond to the criticism that the MoveOn.org ad has received concerning the lady who says, you know, John McCain, you can't have my son. Did you tell her, Bud, that we are under a time constraint?
Yeah, I told her everything, and she still doesn't care.
Well, I'm not saying she doesn't care. I'm saying that she probably feels that we have more time than we actually have. So can we get, you know, moving on this thing? And I don't know what's going on here.
That's Native American.
I know it's Native American music. It's in my ear. So if you can tell her that I think this is her coming back.
Yeah, get the Swizzlers. I'm so sorry, Phil. I apologize. But Steve didn't know where the keys to the Suburban were, and... what I was speaking about...
All right, but that's okay, but we are under a time constraint.
What I was speaking about is that there is no difference between myself and an Indian that wants to return to his hunting ground, because we want to return to a peaceful country, and a country that is concerned more with, you know, the environment and everything.
All right, can we talk about the MoveOn.org ad?
Yes, well, that's my main concern here this evening, Phil.
All right, you feel that it's been lampooned and that people are missing the point.
Absolutely, Phil. The MoveOn.org ad is talking about motherhood and what it is to be a mother. We are lions, Phil. All mothers are lions. We protect our children with violence, if need be. We protect our children as a mother tigress would protect her cubs, or as a mother bear would protect her cubs, or as a mother dog would protect the cub or the
puppies.
The puppies or the cubs, yeah, you can call them either one. At least that's my understanding, because Jim Gessler, who's one of our neighbors, he's a zoo. I can never pronounce it, but he's a zoo person. He's a zoo man.
Zoologist.
I'm sorry?
Is he a zoologist?
Yes, that's it. He's a zoologist. We are very, very... And talk to any mother about her child going off to fight a war for George Bush or John McCain, and you better step aside. There's an old saying, don't get between a dog and its meat, because you will get hurt. And I mean that quite literally. And I think the point that was made was this in the MoveOn.org ad. John McCain, if you think that you're going to take our children and you're going to feed them into some kind of a war blender or a wood chipper I'm sorry to use that kind of terminology.
Well, you're accusing John McCain of wanting to intentionally slaughter children.
If John McCain thinks he's going to feed our children, Phil, into that wood chipper that he calls the Iraq War, well, you want to know something? He may be able to convince a lot of people in the Senate. And he may be able to convince Cindy. Okay? But when you start putting your hands on my sons, and I have three of them, and they're all in high school, By God, may God have mercy on your soul. And that is the point of the MoveOn.org ad, and that is what I'm trying to say through Angels on Our Shoulders.
Let's talk a little bit about this image of a wood chipper. Do you really feel that this man wants to slaughter babies as if he's feeding them into a wood chipper?
Absolutely, Phil. Ask anyone who has fought this war for as long as we have. That is the thing that drives George Bush and John McCain more than anything. In fact, are you back?
Yeah, I got the Swizzler, and I also got the little Milky Way bars.
All right. Steve, come on over here for a minute, honey. My husband, Steve, helped produce a radio ad that we are going to be airing on a variety of radio stations, Phil, from Angels on Our Shoulders. And it was, the announcer is me, Steve produced it. And we try to make the point about John McCain and the bloodbath that he so gleefully awaits sending our children swimming into. Steve?
Yeah, and this is important, Mr. Arnold, the wood chipper.
What, do you use a wood chipper image?
I didn't hear that, Phil. What?
Do you use the wood chipper image?
Well, just hold on. But listen to this ad. In fact, let's do it live, Steve. Do you have the sound effects?
Yeah, it's right over here.
John McCain, I'm a mother, and this is the sound of my baby. But what do you want to do with my baby? You want to feed my baby into your war wood chipper. And when my baby comes out of the war wood chipper, what am I going to want to do? You got it. And what do I do with what's left of my baby? Never again will my baby go. No, what I will hear instead is... And then... Paid for by Angels on Our Shoulders. Now that is real...
Oh, come on.
No, no, hold on for a minute, Phil, because I know your feeling on this.
Wait a minute, okay?
Phil, I'm going to finish what I want to say. That is what is on the minds of millions of women.
What about baby Chino?
All right, I want to say something, if you don't mind.
Hold on, what, Steve?
What about the baby Chino, too?
Oh, the baby Chino ad is part two of the campaign. Now, MoveOn.org has promised us funding to try to get these on the air. Now, you wanted to make a point?
I think it's over the top, is all I'm saying. I think it is taking the war in Iraq and sort of Vietnamizing it to the point where it's this criminal, military-industrial criminal effort to use as fodder for the large war cannon American kids. I just think that imagery is a bit antiquated.
Well, I don't have any idea, Phil, what it is you're talking about. All I know is I'm a mother. And I'm the mother of three sons.
Baby Chino.
I'll do it, Steve.
I know you're the mother of three sons.
Can I play the baby Chino?
You can play the baby Chino. I don't know what that baby Chino is.
Well, let me get the baby Chino.
Well, but can I make an additional point, if you don't mind? There seems to be a belief that the attitude of McCain and Bush and those who support the war is this... The attitude of this kind of 1940s style war industrialists who get fat on the death of others. I just think it's erroneous.
Mm-hmm. Are you done?
Thank you very much for taking me seriously.
Are you done?
Yes, I'm done, Ms. Dooley.
And Phil, I listened to every word you said, but you're missing something. You're missing the very, very private thing that only a mother can feel. And that is the love of her children, Phil, and what we want them to become. I want my sons to become something. I don't want them to become what John McCain wants them to become. Do you understand the difference?
Well, you know, there is this, that they're going to be 18, so you really don't have anything to say about it.
Say that again?
I said they'll be 18, and they can join any army they want, and you won't have anything to say about it.
Not if I... Children are an investment, Phil, and we want... some return on our investment.
Oh, well, that sounds very
Oh, I get it. Do you think I missed... So I'm the big war industrialist? No. The return on the investment that I want is a peaceful world and a loving child. Now, this is a little bit different. We call this the Baby Chino, and it is difficult to listen to, so I would alert your listeners, if you want to.
All right, this is difficult to listen to, folks.
Okay, Steve, you?
Yeah, I got a button.
My name is Bobby Dooley. I'm the mother of three boys that I love so deeply. I remembered when they were small children. But if John McCain has his way, he'll feed them into an espresso steam machine. Okay, now you, Steve.
One Baby Chino coming up.
We've got a mocha soy Baby Chino on the bar. Can you imagine your child being fed through that contraption and coming out nothing more than milky white foam? Why, it's enough to make you want to just... Paid for it by angels on our shoulders. Hello?
Yeah.
So it stuns you, doesn't it?
Yes, I'm stunned.
Well, do you have anything to say on
it? I think it's almost humorous.
Oh, is that right? So a child... Oh, my God.
What did you say? Wait a minute.
Did you say you thought it was humorous?
Absolutely. I thought it was almost humorous.
What? Are you kidding me? God, what a warmonger.
Mr. Henry, do you have to parade your warmongering personality in front of everyone? Is that what you're doing?
Actually, no, but if that's what you think I'm doing, then that's fine, but I think it's almost humorous.
So feeding a child into a machine that pipes scalding hot steam and that then reduces the child, because of the heat, into nothing more than foam. So, listen to this, Phil. This is a baby, right here. You hear that?
Yes, I understand.
All right, this is the baby. Now, here's what's left of the baby. Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
See? That's what John McCain wants to do. And then, naturally, when I see my baby come out as nothing more than a mocha Baby Chino, I go...
What, you go to the bathroom?
No, that was the wrong one. Steve, that's the wrong one. I go, and then I...
And you think that's humorous? What a warmonger.
Yeah, I do. I think it's pretty humorous. A baby Chino. You don't think that's funny?
No, and I... My God, you're obviously not a parent.
I've been a parent.
No, you're obviously not a mother. Only a mother understands, I think, what it means when you hear this sound.
Well, what is that anyway? Is that,
Phil, that's an espresso machine.
Okay, it's an espresso machine. What does that mean?
There isn't a mother that goes into Starbucks that doesn't hear that and think, my God, my God, my child. And then she turns, looks at herself, catches a quick glimpse of herself in the mirror at the door, but not because she's admiring what the stepmaster did to her rear end, no. She's just looking at herself and wondering how it is she could ever have given birth to a child. That she could ever, Phil, have given birth to a baby. Only to know that someday, John McCain would gleefully feed it into...
A wood chipper.
Yeah, a wood chipper. And then he'll... Oh, God, there goes...
Yeah, Mr. Henry, can I make a point here?
What?
That's two babies. That's you. Put the one baby. There's a one baby that goes in, right?
This is one baby.
Now, here comes another baby. Right now. Okay, Bob, load in the other baby. Yeah, oh, boy.
That's what John McCain wants to do. So, now, do you think it's funny, funny man?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I'm sorry, but I do.
Oh, my God. I You know what? I'd hate to be you right now.
Yeah, the mail you're going to get.
The mail you're going to... Listen to that. That's three babies right there. I want you to listen to this, Phil. This is... Very important.
All right, I do have to take a break.
Excuse me. This is very important.
Ms. Dooley, I have to take a break.
Mr. Hall.
Yes, David.
Why don't you let the lady make her point?
I gotta take a break.
Let her make her point, then take your break.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. I appreciate it very much.
That's quite all right.
Phil, this is John McCain standing at a wood chipper wearing his hunting jacket and his mittens. There goes in the... All right, the baby goes in.
You're saying this is a baby.
right here. Now. Oh, God. There's one baby.
There's one baby.
So that's it. That's one or two. Well, actually, that's one. No.
I get it.
Be quiet. Oh, God, I heard the other one.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, see? See, Phil?
Yeah, here comes another baby. There goes the third baby. John McCain feeding babies into the baby wood chipper.
No, well, yeah, that's the baby wood chipper. There's also the war toilet, which is... And then there's...
All right, thank you very much. We got a break. God. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
World famous Phil Henry Show. This is a story that wasn't in our Loon Alert, and some people may think that it belonged in the Loon Alert, but it doesn't. This guy is just a good old fashioned. He's just a good old fashioned psycho. Somehow slipped through the cracks. He's on death row. Maybe the guy should have been in a soft room in a mental bin someplace at a forensic hospital. The guy's name is Andre Thomas, and he ripped out. He pulled out his only good eye and ate it. Now, I don't know how I can put that any other way.
What do you mean, his only good eye?
He only had one good eye.
What about the other one?
You want to know?
No, he didn't.
You got it. He ate the other one back in 2004. Well, he didn't eat it, but he pulled it out. It's funky. Yes, I understand. There are people listening saying, why are you telling us this? This is a slice of life that you must hear about. Do you know what Kurosawa said?
I don't even know who he is. He's like a Japanese general.
A Japanese general. He was a filmmaker. He made Seven Samurai. He said, to be a true artist, you must never close your eyes.
That why the guy put his eye out?
I'm talking about, you got to hear. Will you get out of here and quit asking me these questions?
You said he's supposed to close his eyes. He took them out.
I'm talking about us hearing about news like this. We must. We have to face life. This guy he's way off the beam, man. Way, way off. He's 25. He was arrested for the fatal stabbings of his estranged wife, their young son, and her 13-month-old daughter in March 2004. Okay, there. Then, I didn't tell you the details. Their hearts had been ripped out. He was convicted and condemned for the infant's murder. I don't know how that works. How did that, somehow the kid, the 13-month-old, deserved? I don't know. Anyway, he was convicted and condemned for the infant's death. While in the Grayson County, maybe he thought he was wrongfully accused. Anyway, look at me trying to figure this guy out. While in the Grayson County Jail in Sherman, Thomas similarly had plucked out his right eye before his trial in 2004. A judge subsequently ruled he was competent to stand trial. That can't be. There's no way. I know there's a difference between, and I think we all need to understand, there's a difference between clinical insanity and legal insanity. There's a very big difference. You can be declared legally insane, all right? But you may be declared legally sane for acts that the rest of us would consider completely insane. Let's take, for example, the classic cases of serial killers. They commit crimes that are beyond the pale of anything that we would understand, and yet those guys, most of them, are legally sane because they know the difference between right and wrong. And they generally sit there and they listen to their counsel and they understand what's going on and this and that. This guy rips out his eye, then he eats the other one, and he's legally competent and he's going to go down for the count, huh? A death row officer at the Polensky unit in Texas, this is the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, found Thomas in his cell with blood on his face and had him taken to the unit infirmary. Thomas said he pulled out his eye and ingested it. Oh, God, man. Talk about, I always wanted to work in a prison hospital, and now I know that's my calling.
Phil Henry.